Blog Talk Radio.
I felt that if the right man, not to exploit a sociological problem, but if the right man had ability on the field and with control of himself off the field, if I could find that kind of a man, the American public would accept him.
Jack?
Welcome to this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, the special edition, special Sunday edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call on this 15th of April, 2012. As I take you for the next hour, as we discuss the world of sports, of course, my name, I'm your host, Cyril Quinn. As always, the call number is 347-215-6180. You can always hit me up at Facebook, at Twitter.com, follow me at Twitter.com/CyrilQuinn. Or slash William Gerald, or hit me up at Facebook.com/CyrilQuinn, or you can find me at my any blog. You can find me in some of the blogs and some audio on my website CyrilGeraldQuinn.com. And of course, that was Branch Rickey explaining why he signed Jackie Roosevelt Robinson on that historic day of Tuesday. April 15th, 1947, 65th anniversary of Jackie Robinson breaking the color line in Major League Baseball and, of course, signing with the Brooklyn Dodgers, which will, of course, later become the Los Angeles Dodgers. And, you know, I would like to sit up here and, first of all, you know, Jackie Robinson, you know, you want to talk about a hero. You want to talk about a hero in sports. And to me, there are no more heroes in sports. To be honest with you, there are no more heroes in sports, to be honest with you. But Jackie Robinson was the epitome of a hero, What he had to deal with was being the first black man to play Major League Baseball through the road trips and the racial slurs and just everything that he had to put up with over the course of his career. And me and my friend was joking earlier this week, you know, these guys and athletes today, you know, they're pansies. You know, they are soft as drugstore cotton, especially in the NBA. I mean, none of these guys could put up with that. It's a different time, of course, with racism and, you know, there's still racism, but nowhere near, of course, the level that there was back when Robinson broke in. And it's something that we will never see again, and it's something that needs to be celebrated every year. And I'm kind of disappointed, very disappointed, that there hasn't been more made of it. Now, I'm sure across the, you know, Major League Baseball today, I'm sure that I would think that every uniform number will be 42. Baseball has had a tradition of doing that on this particular day, celebrate the anniversary of of Jackie Robinson. But I'm looking through newspapers and looking through various newspapers across the country, trying to find stuff, trying to find articles on this and commentary. I had to search real hard. I had to search it. You know, this was not in, you know, for some reason, was not national news and didn't seem to be a big deal, to be honest with you. And that's unfortunate because, again, the sacrifices that man had to make. And I think it probably contributed to him dying at such a young age. Remember, he died in his early 50s. He died in his early 50s, was diagnosed, retired from baseball at age 38, and didn't live too much longer after that. So I'm sure the stress of that, I think he had diabetes, and I'm sure the stress of that contributed, went blind before he died. The stress of that contributed to him dying a relatively early death. Early death. Again, what he did on the baseball field, won an MVP, was Rookie of the Year, doesn't even pale in comparisons to the social impact that he had on sports. The most important moment in the history of probably in the history of baseball. And to me, it's pretty sad. Now, two things that are sad, about the situation, sad about it is one, the fact that, again, I don't think enough attention goes to it myself as the years go by. I remember 1997. 1997, it was a huge deal, 50th anniversary. It was played up all over the country. It was the first time. I think that's when number 42 was retired throughout Major League Baseball, and that Mariano Rivera, who still wears 42, would be the last player to wear the number 42 once he retires, which could be at the end of this year or maybe next year. But that's the first thing. Second thing is, excuse me, as I battle this cold. Second thing is that currently only 8.5% of all Major League players are African Americans. 1991, that number was 18%. You look at guys like Willie Mays, Bob Gibson, Hank Aaron, Ernie Banks. Those are some of the greatest players in the history of the sport. Harmon Killebrew. Rod Carew. I always get those two mixed up for whatever reason. But those are some of the greatest players in the history of baseball. And to me, baseball has not done enough to encourage play in the inner cities and amongst African Americans. They haven't. Baseball right now is in a great place financially. You got teams throwing around contracts, throwing around money like it was nothing. And attendance is going to go up this year, according to Buzz Seal League. So baseball, the wild card. Baseball is in a great place right now. Let's be honest. You've basically gotten steroids out of the game. It's going back to pitching, defense, fundamentals, things of that nature. Things that we grew up watching before the steroid era came about. The ballparks and the whole nine yards. But this thing gets ignored. The fact that they're only 8.5%, that they're only 8.5% of blacks make up baseball, and it's again something that does not get talked about enough for whatever reason. But I feel that Jackie Robinson would not be happy with that number. And to be honest with you, that number would be that way if he was still alive, because he would have does things. He would have had some plans in place for that not to happen. Trust me. But again, we tip our ode on this show to a man who again made the ultimate sacrifice, and again did something that maybe that will never be done in the history of sports. Had as much impact as any athlete has ever had on any particular sport in terms of importance. Jackie Roosevelt Robinson, again, breaking the color barrier back in 1947, of course, with the help of one Branch Rickey, who was with the Brooklyn Dodgers at that point. Good movie that HBO came out with about 15 or 16 years ago, called Soul of the Game, that depicted, Jackie Robinson breaking the color line along with, and really depicted the Negro Leagues. A lot of people forget about them. It's centered around Jackie Robinson, Josh Gibson, and Cecil Page, who was played by Blair Underwood, Michael T. Williams, Delroy Lindo, and Michael T. Williamson played Josh Gibson. So check that out when you get a chance. I'm sure it's on DVD, Netflix or something of that manner. So check it out when you get a chance. Just getting started here on this latest edition of this Saturday morning wake up call, the special Sunday edition. Been away for a couple of weeks, so this is really going to be our introduction, to baseball as the season is about 8 to 10 games in. We'll talk plenty baseball, Coming up, though, we'll have some Saturday morning, Sunday morning headlines. We'll be right back on the Saturday morning wake-up call.
Well, we're moving on now.
Saturday morning wake-up call, Cyril Quinn. Again, taking you for the next hour up until 10 o'clock as we discuss the world of sports. Sunday morning headlines, NHL playoffs, very exciting day of NHL hockey, especially in the Eastern Conference. Eastern Conference playoffs are going to be great. The Capitals even up their series with Boston with a 2-1 victory in two overtime. In the second overtime, Thomas Backstrom gets the game-winning goal. Caps have played well in the series. They could have easily be up 2-0 in this series. They lost the first game in Boston, 1-0 in overtime. So they'll come home, tied that one with a lot of momentum heading back to D.C. Ottawa over the Rangers 3-2 in overtime. They tie up their series at 1 apiece. Chicago ties up its series at 1 with a 4-3 victory over Phoenix in overtime. And St. Louis evens up its series at 1 with a three nothing shutout over San Jose. So today, of course, you'll have Philly and Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh trying to get on track, dropping the first two games at home with no goaltending. But I mean, they've just Philadelphia offensively has dominated the series. Detroit, Nashville all tied at 1. They'll head back to Detroit. LA, Vancouver. You have LA, Vancouver, and New Jersey and Florida. Again, there are two particular series that I have my eye on in the NHL playoffs, Philadelphia and Pittsburgh and Washington, Boston. The Eastern Conference series are tremendous. So, I mean, these are first-round series. So, again, that Philadelphia-Pittsburgh, I still think Pittsburgh has some juice left based on the fact how close these games have been, based on the fact that how high-scoring these games have been. When you don't have great goaltending, you're never out of a series. When you're facing a team that doesn't have great goaltending, I should say that. They're never out because, you know, that momentum can shift at any time. And Philadelphia does not have great goaltending. I keep hearing how great their goaltender played. He gave up 5 goals. I mean, you're going to say he could have easily gave up 10, yeah, but he gave up 5 goals. That's not playing well. So I still think Pittsburgh will be in that series. I expect them to win game 3. And I think that series is 2-2 going back to Pittsburgh. I put you that way. The Washington-Boston series is going to go 7, I feel. I really do feel that's going to go 7 games. Livorno midfielder Pierre-Emerick Morsani died yesterday in a Serie B match in Italy. He collapsed on the field. Had a cardiac, and it was later discovered that he had a cardiac, that he died after having a cardiac arrest. He was just 25 years old, and just something you hate to hear. Of course, you have Olympic soccer coming up, you know, in a few months in London, and this is an absolute tragedy that this, you know, 25, you just can't, it's one of those things, you know, just happens to show you how fragile life is. This guy is 25 years old. He has to be in top shape to be playing soccer on that type of level. When you talk about the, teams like Manchester United and the Champions Cup and it's just one of those things that is shocking, to be honest with you. But again, 25 years old, dying of a cardiac arrest. A cardiac arrest. They tried to revive him for over an hour. He had no heartbeat. After his collapse, he had no heartbeat at all. So it was a pretty sudden death once he collapsed on the field. Giants closer Brian Wilson could be done for the season, and will likely be done for the season with the elbow injury. He's looking at Tommy John surgery. And this is, a blow for the Giants. I mean, Wilson, a couple of years ago, was one of the big reasons why they won the World Championship in 2010. He had a tremendous season. He had a tremendous season with the 48 saves, was dominant in the postseason. Last season, he missed, missed down the stretch with a couple of injuries. And he comes into this season again, pitches a couple of games, and next thing you know, he's probably going to be done for the season. Giants do have a deep bullpen, but again, that is the one position in baseball that you cannot add, that's almost impossible to replace unless you have a dominant setup man, is that closer position. Again, Giants are already up against it in terms of, having to deal with teams like, Arizona. Dodgers are playing great. Are playing great so far at starting off with their quick start. We'll see how the Giants respond. They're going to have to score some runs. And get dominant pitching to kind of offset Wilson's loss. But again, this is a huge loss for the San Francisco Giants. Brian Wilson likely being done for the season with the elbow injury, and will more likely need Tommy John surgery. 347-215-6180 is your call number. 16 minutes after the 9 o'clock hour. When we return, we'll get into some NBA. And which superstar will be back first? Kobe or LeBron? Kobe or Dwight Howard? We'll talk about that on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Different the sport would be had blacks been allowed to play you know, long before that. I mean, think about how, you know, think about all the superstars that there were in the Negro Leagues. You know, Roy Campanella, before, you know, Roy Campanella, you know, Cecil Page, you know, Jackie Robinson, Josh Gibson, Papa, Cool Papa Bell. I mean, he has so many great, great players that we, I mean, we'll never, the game, again, I mean, Josh Gibson, you know, he was called the Black Babe Ruth. Josh Gibson, and just, you know, he said that he once hit a ball out of Yankee Stadium. You know, who knows? I mean, maybe Josh Gibson is your home run leader. Just, you know, unfortunately that it took that long for African Americans to be broken into baseball. Jackie Robinson certainly did not embarrass himself or embarrass his race with what by breaking in and, you know, doing what he did over the course of his career, not only being a great player but a great ambassador and representative of the the African American race and of the sport of baseball, even long after his playing career was over. We're going to get to some NBA now. We are heading down the stretch, as they say in the Kentucky Derby, which is coming up in a couple of weeks. And a couple of weeks left in the NBA season. Teams are gearing up as far as home court. It looks like Chicago basically wrapped that up with that victory over Miami earlier this week. Two games stood out to me this week, and that's the first one. Chicago, Miami, San Antonio, Los Angeles. The Chicago Miami game, very good game, of course, went to overtime. If you're Miami, Miami did some nice things in that game. I thought Miami returned back somewhat to its identity defensively with their performance. And that's a major problem that I've had with Miami. There's so many things, issues mentally that Miami has. But from a basketball standpoint, their biggest problem is me, and the reason why they haven't played, the reason why I don't think they'll win a championship is they don't play defense the way they played last year. I mean, they're much more susceptible in transition. They're not good against guarding the three-point shot. And, you know, to me, they, you know, all the focus has been on, you know, can LeBron play with Wade, Bosh get his touches. Everything was offensively that they kind of forgot what worked for them last year and got them to the finals, and that was playing great defense. They don't play great defense. Now, you look at the numbers, you'll say, what are you talking about? They average, you know, they're only giving up 93 points this year. They're giving up 94 points last year. Well, remember, this is a condensed season. And again, you just got to look at what you're seeing compared to just these stats. It's where stats can lie sometimes. They're not playing as good a defense as they were last year, nowhere near it. That Chicago game, again, Chicago shows you how deep it is, but you still have to be concerned about a couple of things, about number one, Derrick Rose getting back to 100%, and number two, Chicago scoring down the stretch in close games if Derrick Rose is, you know, let's say he is healthy. Let's say, you know, he's not effective or a defense is kind of taking him out of the game and make somebody else beat him. Do they have enough offense down the stretch in the last 2-3 minutes of a tight playoff game? That's still a question mark for Chicago. And, of course, Miami, the question mark is, of course, closing games. What if Dwayne Wade is not on top of his game down the stretch? Is LeBron willing to close games? Is Chris Bosh going to get enough touches? You know, Miami is an absolute enigma. You don't know. You know, they're kind of cruising about. Miami, you get the sense with Miami, they're kind of waiting for the playoffs, which, again, they're in no position by any stretch. They're in no position to be that complacent. The Los Angeles-San Antonio game stood out, of course, because San Antonio came into that game on a 11-game winning streak. Lakers had no Kobe Bryant. Lakers come into San Antonio and just destroy the Spurs, beat them by 14 points, were up by as much as 21 points over the course of the game. Andrew Bynum dominates that game with 30 rebounds. The Lakers, you know, played by far and away to me their best game of the year. You got a lot of balanced scoring. You know, Ron Artest, who quietly, a meta world piece, quietly has had a very good year, you know, throughout all his through all the antics and all the stuff that he does off the court to draw attention to himself. He's played good basketball this season and really deserves to be on the all defensive team. Had 26 points in the game. Laker bench played well. Matt Barnes, Steve Blake. Lakers get back Kobe Bryant. They are a team that is certainly deserves to be amongst the few teams, the 6-7 teams that can win a championship, and that definitely can get to the finals and win a championship. It's a bad matchup for San Antonio when they play to either the Lakers or Memphis because they just do not have the size to deal with the Lakers. Bynum gives San Antonio all kinds of fits. You look at the last two games the Lakers have played in San Antonio this year and going back to late last year, Bynum has dominated those games. He's had his way with Tim Duncan. Their front line is just too small. He, you know, kills them, punishes them on the offensive glass. And, again, if San Antonio, I'll say it once, I'll say it again, if they can somehow avoid the Lakers and Memphis in the Western Conference playoffs, they're going to the finals. Now, that's more highly unlikely, but those two teams are their biggest, are the biggest problems in terms of the biggest roadblocks for the Spurs getting back to the NBA finals. Some NBA news, Sacramento, as we know it, probably is done as a franchise in Sacramento. It is clear to me that the Maloofs who turned down the deal for the city to help fund them a new arena in downtown Sacramento. The Maloofs, because the Maloofs didn't want to pay $3.25 million in operating costs, while the city would have paid the other $6.75 million in operating costs, which that lets you know that they don't want, you know, the Maloofs do not want basketball in Sacramento. They want to get out of Sacramento. They want to go to Anaheim. Anaheim has an arena ready for them. They have a much bigger television market. Certainly the Lakers and Clippers would not be happy about that. You know, Orange County has well over 3 million people. Lakers are about to sign a new TV deal with Time Warner. They're about to switch and get out their Fox deal. But, you know, Sacramento, the city of Sacramento has done everything it could possibly do to keep basketball in Sacramento. But, again, bottom line is the Maloofs don't want to be in Sacramento. The Maloofs, you know, they don't want to fund a new arena. They want the NBA to help them, you know, renovate their current arena, and that's just not going to happen. So more than likely, next year will probably be the last year you see basketball in the city of Sacramento, which is unfortunate, but that's what's going to happen. And of course, you have two superstars, two of the NBA's best players currently on the men right now, and Dwight Howard, Kobe Bryant. Dwight Howard's going to be out for at least two more weeks, probably until the playoffs start, and who knows if he even, you know, plays in the postseason. To me, that doesn't even matter because Orlando's not going anywhere. Orlando's not going to do anything in the playoffs anyway. He has a herniated disc in his back. Kobe Bryant has a shin, and I don't think we're hearing everything about the Kobe Bryant injury. It's hard for me to picture a shin keeping Kobe Bryant off the floor, considering some of the injuries that he's played with. Again, they're diagnosing it as a shin injury. He's missed the past four games. He won't play today against Dallas. He has started to run though. He has been cleared to start running, so that is a good sign if you're a Laker fan. If you're a Laker, listen, if you have to see him for the rest of the regular season until the playoffs start, then so be it. Last thing you want is him to come back and, you know, have a setback or re-injury, and then he's done for the playoffs. So I think the Lakers are going to, you know, be very careful in terms of how they deal with Kobe Bryant. So there you go with the NBA. Have a doubleheader today. Lakers and Dallas play. Lakers and Dallas play on national television. I believe, I don't think it's New York, Chicago. I believe the Knicks. I have to look up who. Knicks have been on a lot lately. So they'll. Yes, we're back here. Had a little technical difficulty, but we are back on the Saturday morning wake-up call. So, you know, should be a very interesting next few couple of weeks of the NBA. NBA playoffs, of course, start on April 28th. And, again, anywhere from 7 to 9 teams can win the championship. It is absolutely wide open. Even the Celtics are back in the mix. I mean, that just tells you how nutty the season is, the fact that you cannot discount the Celtics as being a team that could possibly come out the East and possibly maybe win a championship. It's been that kind of a season. When we return, we'll talk some baseball. Some crazy contracts are being given out. Why they're being given out, we'll discuss that, and we'll look at some early season surprises. That is coming up on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Again, this is basically our introductory show to the baseball season. We've been off a couple of weeks and didn't really get a chance to, open the baseball season. So we're doing that in grand fashion as we talk about the historic day of April 15th, 1947. This is the 65th anniversary of Jackie Robinson breaking the cutter line in Major League Baseball as he was signed by Branch Rickey and by the Brooklyn Dodgers, and again won a championship in Brooklyn. Won the MVP, rookie of the year, 6-time All Star. Had a wonderful career, though not that long of a career. Had a wonderful career, but his impact far exceeded what he did on the field. As we all know, and again, it's unfortunate that, again, only 8.5% of all Major League Baseball players are black right now in 2012. That number, again, 18% in 1991. Brandon Phillips signs a 5-year, $72.6 million contract for the Cincinnati Reds. Brandon Phillips is 36 years old, okay? Cincinnati, listen. I've criticized teams in the past for, being like farm systems, like the Kansas City Royals. So it's kind of hard for me to knock Cincinnati for trying to go out there and giving out these big contracts and trying to compete with the big boys. Because, listen, when you're in Cincinnati, you have to overpay to compete with the likes of Philadelphia, the Yankees, those particular teams, the Red Sox and what have you. So, you somewhat have to you have to overpay for certain players. But, there's overpaying, and then there's just making moves that make no sense. The Votto deal, I shake my head about that. But Votto, at least, is in the prime of his career, 28 years old, and has won an MVP. Brandon Phillips, he's a nice player, but he he's at the tail end. He's at the end of his career. I mean, how many good years, realistically, at 36? Excuse me. At 36, realistically, how many good years does Brandon Phillips have left? Brandon Phillips is, you know, is not a power hitter, though he has power. He's not a guy that's going to get you 25 to 30 home runs. He's just, you know, he's built on, you know, he's a great defensive player. His game is also built on speed. Those skills are going to decline quicker, much quicker than a guy who has 25 to 30 home run power. Okay, so and there's a reason why no player, no second baseman at the age of 32, at the age of 36, has ever signed a contract of this magnitude. This is not a smart move, and I just don't get it. Again, you're seeing a lot of teams lock up their players before they hit arbitration with contracts. You see that with Matt Cain getting a big contract, and it's been, you know, the free agent market makes the free agent market, you know, it basically dries up the free agent market, what it does. But it's also smart on the teams to lock up, you know, they're projecting players. You know, they say this guy has a chance to be a franchise player, so let's lock him up before he reaches free agency, so we don't have to either lose him or have to give him a crazy, ridiculous contract. And again, it's smart business. It's smart business. There's a number of players who have gotten locked up, and you know, I think it's good for baseball in the standpoint of that you don't see a lot of guys jumping from team to team. And you keep a lot of homegrown guys in house. I have no problem with that. But when you see, you know, again, a brand new, you know, when you see these contracts just tossed around like this, you know, that contract, again, that is, I'm telling you right now, that the Brandon Phillips contract is a contract that's going to bite Cincinnati in the ass. Period. And so is the Votto contract to a lesser extent. But again, Votto, I understand Votto's a little bit more. He is the face of their franchise, won an MVP, could have 5 or 6 more years where he hits 30 or 35 home runs and is a legit, you know, top player in the National League. I understand that. But again, the Brandon Phillips contract, I don't understand at all. Had some early surprises in baseball. The Nats, Dodgers, and Mets are all gotten off to fast starts. I don't know how legitimate the Mets are. They are 5-0 right now against Atlanta and Philadelphia. I don't see that lasting. But the Nationals, I can see the Nationals being in it for the long term. I think the Nationals have arguably one of the top two or three pitching staffs in the National League, maybe in all of baseball. When you talk about, you know, Strasburg, Jordan Zimmermann, Edwin Jackson, Gio Gonzalez, combine that with the bullpen. The bullpen was dominant, was great last year. They wore down because of the lack of offense, and also because they weren't getting enough innings out of their starters. But if you can, you know, if you combine what they have with their starting pitching right now with that bullpen, the Nats are going to be a scary team to deal with. And you know, they haven't even scored any runs yet. I mean, when they start getting some of their hitters going, you know, look out. That division right now is certainly ripe for the picking. Philadelphia has taken a step back. They can't score any runs right now. You know, you have Utley, no Howard. Who knows how effective those guys will be once they get back. You know, Atlanta can score, cannot score. Miami is a mess. I mean, the whole Ozzie Guillen situation, plus that combustible clubhouse that they have anyway, who knows where they go from here. So that division is ripe for the picking. And listen, a team like we've seen worse the first in baseball before, and the Nationals didn't even finish in last place last season. Nationals, you know, were, I believe, 80 and 82 last season, so they had a relatively good season. Look out. I mean, I think the Nationals could be a year ahead of schedule and possibly get to the postseason. When we return, Dumb and Dumber, we'll talk about Bobby Petrino and Ozzie Guillen. That's coming up on this last edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. We'll be right back. Uh-huh. 42 minutes after the 9 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. And to this week, you had two guys who just epitomize the segment we have.
Are you kidding me?
And we're going to begin with Ozzie Guillen, who apparently has a love affair with Fidel Castro, and apparently has, you know, a lot of respect for all the wonderful things that Mr. Castro has done during the course of his lifetime. Just, you know, classic Ozzie Guillen, you know, no filter, and for the better part of his career, he's gotten away with it. He's been must-see TV. He's been Mr. Quotable. He's been a guy who, if you're a reporter, beat reporter, you can't wait until he opens his mouth. Well, I would have to think once he came out with, you know, with the quotes that were in Time magazine about his respect for Fidel Castro, because he's gone all these years without being caught and what have you. That is a comment you probably wouldn't have wanted to hear if you're a beat reporter. That you probably would have been given that same look that was given to, say, an Al Campanis or a Jimmy the Greek when they made also just asinine statements in terms of race. About 25 years ago, back in the 80s. I don't know if Guillen can survive this, because not only does he make those statements, he makes them in Miami, Florida, and which is the worst place that he could have made those statements. I mean, there are going to be people when the Marlins get off this road trip. You know, there are going to be certainly people protesting him at the ballpark, picketing in front of the stadium. The numbers have not been great. Their home attendance numbers haven't been great despite the new ballpark and, you know, acquiring Heath Bell and Jose Reyes and what have you. It's going to be very interesting to watch for the next couple of weeks how this thing plays out. You know, Guillen has won a championship. Those people don't care. I mean, again, Fidel Castro is like a four-letter word in the city of Miami. I mean, he's caused so much pain. And you have to remember, you know, Cuba is basically, again, about, 90 miles from Miami. I mean, that you make those kind of statements, that hits home pretty hard. Again, I don't know. You know, there are people in sports who say things to draw attention. He's not the first. He won't be the last. But, you know, I think most of those people have some type of filter to where it's like, okay, I can go this far, but I can't go that far. I mean, most people are very, you know, Ocho Cinco. You can think of a few other guys. A lot of them will say something to me like, you know, that was crazy, but it wasn't off the charts, and it doesn't hit home. This cuts deep. What he said. This cuts very deep. The Cuban community, Cuban American community, and down in Florida. Again, I would not be surprised if just the pressure, there's so much pressure was put on their franchise that they were forced to get rid of them. So we'll see how that plays out down in South Florida. Bobby Petrino, of course, out as head coach of Arkansas because of the affair that he had. With a 25 year old, it was because he lied to the police and the university about his motorcycle accident. Originally, of course, Petrino said that nobody was with him at the time, but the police report came out and said, "Listen, what are you talking about? There was a girl with you, and of course, that girl that girl, we found out that Petrino was having an affair with the girl that he had hired, that he had pushed the girl to this position that she was not qualified to have, and that the girl, again, 25 years old, had given her $20,000. This is a case where the cover up is basically worse than the crime. And he didn't commit a crime as far as the accident, but, you know, you have to ask yourself, your Petrino, was this worth $3.6 million a year, one of the better jobs in the SEC, a program that's on the rise, and, you know, just everything. I mean, if you're Petrino, you know, what made you believe that you were going to get away with this? I mean, you think the police, you think you could pay off the police? I mean, Arkansas, like, you know, Arkansas is crazy about football, but this is not Arkansas is not Penn State in their heyday. It's not a small town. They're not going to, like, you're not Joe Paterno, frankly. So this was going to come out eventually one way or the other. And again, Bobby Petrino will never coach major college football again. You know, maybe he gets a job somewhere at Florida Atlantic or South Alabama. But as far as SEC, Pac-10, Big Ten, that's done with. Yeah, and you have to be a fool to hire Bobby Petrino. I mean, there's a guy who quit on the NFL team with 3 games remaining. You know, he tried to take another coach's job, despite the fact that he was still employed by, you know, Louisville. Back when, you know, he was employed when he was coaching Louisville, he tried to interview for Tommy Tuberville's job at Auburn. I mean, so he's made a habit of lying to the universities and just lying to everybody. I mean, this is what he does. He's a great coach. I mean, he's won everywhere he's gone. I mean, like I said, Arkansas was on the rise. Arkansas was 11-2 this year. Their two losses came to Alabama and LSU. At Alabama and LSU, Arkansas would have been one of the favorites this year to win the SEC and probably contend for a national championship. But, you know, that is over and done with. And to me, Petrino, you know, again, we see so many of these guys, you know, athletes or coaches just feel that, you know, they get to a certain level and they just feel that they can get away with basically anything. I mean, look at Tressel, look at Jim Tressel, look at Joe Paterno, and just in the last year, you know, cover-ups versus the actual crimes of what they've done. And the cover-up has gotten them, you know, you can make a case that it might have killed Joe Paterno, but certainly Jim Tressel is, you know, has gotten Jim Tressel into some hot water and he you know, finds themselves outside the college football world right now. So you have Ozzie Guillen and Bobby Petrino just, you know, again, dumb and dumber. I can't think of any other word for those two as far as just saying something stupid and doing something stupid. And again, it's amazing. It's amazing how these guys just are their own, in many ways, are their own worst enemies at times. And they pay both of them, you know, at least Ozzie Guillen right currently has a job. But Petrino, again, $3.6 million a year, SEC job, program on the rise. He gives that up, you know, he has a marriage, 4 kids. It's just remarkable, you know, that you would put that on the line for a 25-year-old. But, you know, that's the world of sports that we live in. 347-215-6180 is your call number. When we return, we're going to wrap up the program, and I will give. We'll wrap up the program, and I will also have a couple of words, a couple of personal words from a personal standpoint. We'll talk about that. And much, much more on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call. We'll be right back. 3 minutes after the 9 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, on this Sunday edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Good to be back with you. The program will return next week to Saturday morning, looking at probably around 11:30. So we'll get back to our Saturday routine. But again, it's good to be back after a couple weeks out. You wonder why that, of course, I mean, we're celebrating the 65th anniversary of Jackie Robinson breaking the color line. You'll see a lot of stuff probably on, you know, a lot of these baseball games. We assume that everybody will be wearing the number 42 in honor of one Jackie Roosevelt Robinson who broke the color line back in 1947. So, you know, certainly we take our hats off to the sacrifices that he made during, over the course of his baseball career, as well as over the course of his life that ended far too soon. You wonder why I personally love sports. And, you know, all the time somebody asks me why I got into this field, or why, you know, again, why I love sports. And, you know, I give most, if not all, the credit to my grandfather, who, you know, used to have me sitting on his lap when I was younger, you know, 4, 5, 6 years old, watching ball games, and he was a baseball fanatic. I'm sure he's probably seen Jackie Robinson playing in person, probably during the Negro Leagues and some of those times, during those particular times. He was a huge baseball fan and was a good baseball player in his own right, you know, when he was younger, in his teenage and high school years. I never really gave the proper respect or credit as far as that, you know, love of sports or why I love sports to my grandmother, who passed away last week at the age of 88. She had to endure about 50 years between my grandfather and myself, about 60 years of watching two men yell at a television, scream at a television, maybe at times curse at a television. And, you know, she was a decent sports fan, and became a good sports fan. She had no choice but to, with, you know, again, with, you know, myself, with my grandfather, and even after he passed back in 89, with me basically somewhat taking that torch and watching games during the weekend with her. And over the course, up until she moved to Connecticut and moved from Trenton to Connecticut in 2002. So basically, you know, 13 years, and again, basically about 50 or 60 years between my grandfather and I, she had to endure, you know, many days and nights of just sports. But she, again, ended up loving golf. She was a big Tiger Woods fan during that time period that once he broke in, and she would watch the majors, especially when Tiger was in it. She would even watch some basketball. Because she moved with my aunt, my aunt's a huge Connecticut women's basketball fan, of course, living in the state of Connecticut, so she would keep up with college basketball when Connecticut was in the Final Four which was, you know, every year, which is about every year, either they're in the Final Four or they're winning national championships. So she certainly, again, loved, you know, had a passion for life in general, and she certainly will obviously be missed. Again, 88 years old. When you live that long, you've done something right. She did a lot of things right, and certainly she will be missed amongst amongst family members, but amongst anybody who was fortunate or blessed enough to be touched by her. And she touched a lot of people over the course of her life, during her lifetime, during her 88 years. And again, I never gave the proper amount of credit to her as far as, with the sports. But there's no question that, I would not be the person I am. Forget about sports, but just the individual I am, or would not have made it this far in life without her and what she's done and what she did over the course of my life. So certainly, she will be missed. She obviously will be missed, but she lived a great, great life. And, if we can all get to live to see 88, you'll certainly sign up for 88 years of life. That's it's a long time to live. That's just the epitome of a full life. And, I will certainly miss her. Miss her certainly moving forward. As always, it was great to be back to the wake-up call to the show. We've had a couple of weeks where we haven't been here. We'll be back at our regular time next week. Look out for have a couple of articles on the way for CyrilGeraldQuinn.com. Catch the replay of this show at any time at Blog Talk Radio. BlogTalkRadio.com/CyrilQuinn. And again, I will post that on Facebook, Twitter, and a number of websites it will be posting on. So have a great, great Sunday. Have a great upcoming week. I will see you soon. So long.